At the Table with Tony is brought to you by Trafe Hustlin'. That's www.trafehustlin.com. Your home for all things barbecue.
Welcome to At the Table with Tony. My name is Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. And today I'm being joined by Monsignor Joseph Ambrosio. He is the pastor of Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church in Newark, New Jersey. I'm also being joined by my good friend, Eric Lavin. He is an authority on all things Catholic and Italian and Italian-American history. So, Monsignor and Eric, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Tony, for having me.
Thank you, Tony.
It's my pleasure. I mean, it's kind of I've been doing these shows. This is my 15th show that I've done since I've been in quarantine. So it's a way to kind of continue my podcast, even when I'm not able to go out on the street or go out into the different restaurants and the different places to visit. So this is a way that I get to still continue doing what I love to do by bringing some my love for Italian Americana to the world. So the topic of tonight's conversation is Italian parishes or Italian churches in North Jersey and beyond. So, Monsignor, you born and raised Italian American. So give us a little bit of your background. Where is your family from in Italy, and where are you from here in the States?
My family is from, which would be my mother and father were from Morona del Sannio, which is in the province of Campobasso in the region of Molise, Italy. My father was born in Italy, born American though, because his father and mother were American citizens. My mother came later as a child. She grew up in Montreal, Canada, and then also, you know, in an Italian community. I was born in 1948 in Jersey City. I'm one of the Margaret Haig children, you know, born in Margaret Haig Hospital. The community I was born into was already in 1948, was already more than 60 years old. And it was an interesting community. I grew up in Bayonne, also in an Italian parish. Holy Rosary in Jersey City, Our Lady of the Assumption in Bayonne. And I was always with Italian people, and my priesthood too, always with Italian people.
So here's a question I want to ask you, Monsignor. When did you know that you were going to become a priest? Was there a certain point in your life?
In grammar school.
Okay.
In grammar school.
Was there something
a good example of some of the good priests? I mean, in Holy Rosary, we had Monsignor Santoro, who was a fabulous priest. I didn't know him very well because we had moved away, but we were there every Saturday to be with our elderly aunt and uncle, my grandparents' sister. And we used to go to church there. That's how I know that boy. I knew him as a child, believe it or not. And in Bayonne, we went to Assumption Church, and there we had very good pastor, priests, very good sisters. We had the Filippini sisters, and we went to church a lot in Catholic grammar school. It was a very, very good preparation, very good training for anyone that had a vocation. It was very, to contrast it with today, we went to Mass every day in Lent. And that's when there was the fast from midnight. We brought our lunch in one bag and our breakfast in another bag. We went to Mass every day in October for Our Lady's Rosary, and every day in May with benediction in the afternoon. And Stations of the Cross every Friday at 2:30. And then we would be dismissed from church with benediction, the whole works. It was a wonderful thing. I'm glad I old enough to have seen that and to have experienced it was wonderful.
Yeah, because unfortunately nowadays, I mean, I don't think that I've never had that experience growing up. Although I still felt close to the church, I just never had that same experience. And you know, it's unfortunate in a way that sometimes I guess we kind of forget our religion, that it should be so important to us, and yet we kind of take it for granted, I think, sometimes. But I think that through this pandemic, I have noticed. I mean, maybe it's just me, or maybe it's just, you know, seeing stuff on Facebook, but I have noticed to a certain extent that people have seem to be coming a little bit closer to the faith, trying to draw closer to the church. So I don't know. Have you, Eric or Monsignor, have you kind of noticed this same thing?
I mean,
yes, they grow closer to God because there is a something frightening and something that is canceling out our life as we know it. And that is not an easy, it's not an easy thing to accept. We need comfort, we need help, we need the strength that comes from on high, as they say.
Amen.
I've noticed too, I mean, I manage the, you know, I'm one of the few people that manage the Mount Carmel Facebook page. And I must say, we've all gotten kind of creative with how to reach out to the people and actually, you know, touch them in different ways rather than them coming to church. So, I mean, we've been doing, thanks to Alan, our seminarian, he had a fantastic idea to shout out all the saints that we have in church. We have loads of saints, loads of pictures, loads of everything. And giving them just a brief history, brief synopsis, you know, a little devotion. I mean, all the viewership that we've seen too with Monsignor's weekly masses. I mean, he does Saturday nights, 7 in English, Sundays at 11 in Italian, and I mean, just hundreds, even thousands and thousands of views, which is amazing.
Yes.
So, and a lot of people commenting in, writing in, I was married in this church, I was baptized in this church, my family this, my family, and people are starting to reconnect, and I hope that as a result of the pandemic, it might be an impetus for people to come back, reconnect with us in person, you know, when we can again, obviously.
There's that famous saying, there are no atheists in foxholes. You know, so, I mean, yeah. Really... When things are going bad, people find a way to come back to God, and I think I've seen that plenty during this time. And again, it's very trying, and it's, you know, but you have to look to the bright side, that there is light at the end of the tunnel. Hopefully, that the numbers will start to go down, and we'll get. Well, I don't think we'll ever be a normal the way it was prior to this pandemic, but there will be this new normal, and I hope that we can take some comfort in maybe life getting back to a little bit normalcy. And really, for me, I know I miss church so much. Like I love going to church. I love attending mass, and to be absent from that, to be separated from that. Because even it is nice to be able to watch it on the live stream or watch it on TV. But I'll be honest with you, it's for me, it's still not the same as actually being in the pew.
No, it'll never be the same. It's not meant to be that. It's an artificial thing.
Yes,
it's
meant
to be experienced in person. You go to God. God doesn't come to you online or on TV or on Facebook or on whatever.
That's a great point. But we'll eventually. I pray that again. Like I said, we'll get back to mass. But I do want to talk a little bit about you know, kind of the topic of the evening, which is Italian parishes or Italian churches, particularly in North Jersey. But obviously, if we kind of talk about other places, that's absolutely fine. So, Eric, I know that you were kind of born and raised pretty much in Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church, which is where Monsignor is the pastor. So. What has been, like, first of all, I guess either Eric or Monsignor, give us a little bit of history of Our Lady of Mount Carmel Church in the Ironbound section or the Down Neck neighborhood of Newark, New Jersey.
Monsignor, you want me to do that or you do that?
No, you go ahead.
All right, well, Mount Carmel Church, I mean, the brief...
I'm joking if necessary.
A brief history. I mean, because I told you I have like 70 pages here in front of me. A brief history is that we were founded in 1889, in December of 1889. We were the third Italian parish at the time. The two parishes that precede us is Holy Rosary, where Monsignor was baptized in 1887, and then St. Francis in Hoboken, which I believe is 1888. So Bishop Wigger at the time, and Monsignor, I mean, he's the storyteller, so he knows more. Bishop Wigger was the one who had established the first mission for Italians in Newark in 1882. And then it was not until 1889 that we were able to acquire the Second Church Reformed Church, which was located on Ferry Street. It's still there today, which you can see. We had an interesting beginning because for the first 5 years, we did not have an Italian priest. We actually had Father Schadafer, who was Austrian, and then Father Joseph Ali, who was Palestinian. And then we had an Italian priest, which is very interesting. Monsignor D'Aquila, who was, I've mentioned it to Monsignor before. He doesn't say it. A lot of similarities between both Monsignor and D'Aquila and Ambrosio. They were both from Molise. They both were musicians. Both scholars. Monsignor is a scholar. He knows a lot about European history. And he established the first school for the children of Italian immigrants in the state of New Jersey.
Really?
Yes. And at the time, he was able to entrust that to Mother Cabrini. Mother Cabrini worked down neck for about 4 years or so. And then she started the St. Anthony's Orphan Girls Asylum, which is presently Redemptoris Mater Seminary, not cemetery, in Carney, right next to me. And the church eventually moved. I mean, the Italians, they left that industrialized area that around Penn Station. They moved more centrally located into the Ironbound. They built Mount Carmel Church on Oliver Street in 1955. And between 1955 and 1972, they were operating two sites under the same name, so both Mount Carmels. Eventually in 72, Mount Carmel was shuttered on Ferry Street. It was later sold. And we've been on Oliver Street ever since. So it's an interesting history, very much interesting. I mean, and also affected by time. Archbishop Walsh died at around the time in 1952 when there was talk of, you know, a new church and so on and so forth, whereas that might not have been his intention. He would have rathered a new school than a new church. Hmm. So we might, had he lived a little longer, we probably would not have the church on Oliver Street. It's very interesting. But then Archbishop Roland comes in and we were able to build the new church, still have the old school, and that's where we're at today. I'm under excellent leadership since 1996. Monsignor as administrator, at the time Bishop DiMarzio as pastor. We've been able to hold down the fort, as they say, and keep it going, you know.
And it really is one of the – it's truly a gem. I mean, it's a gem of all the Italian parishes or all the Italian churches. But really, even in the Italian-American community, it's really such a – I always look forward to the feast you have every July for Our Lady of Mount Carmel. And, it still has that community feeling in a way. You know, it's still – people still come back to celebrate and to celebrate, obviously, the feast, but also celebrate, I'm sure, different sacraments.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, it's no longer, listen, it's no longer Italian and Italian American. I mean, we have Portuguese, we have Spanish, we have Peruvians, we have Ecuadorians. I mean, we have every Polish American, you name it, and hyphen American, anything. Haitians as of late and recently, which is a beautiful community. It's amazing. I mean, it truly has changed, but it's for the better, you know, and our community and our parish only grows from there. And I'm sure Monsignor can add to that.
Go ahead, Monsignor.
Well, I'm just going to spotlight a couple of the people mentioned. Bishop Wigger was sent to Rome to study by Bishop Bailey. And he studied at Brignola Sala Seminary in Genoa. He came back to America on the boat, of course, in those days, talking 1880, before even. And cholera broke out on the boat. However, the passengers who were on the higher decks were told that if they, you know, if the doctor checked them out, they could leave. Bishop, at that time, Father Wigger, refused to leave and remained a month on the boat quarantined, 30 or 40 days.
Hmm.
Would not leave the passengers. He could have died during that period, and a piece of history would have been lost, but most of all, a very fruitful ministry and a very wonderful bishop in the state of New Jersey would have never been. Archbishop Whittier acted on information that he was given, that there had accumulated between Broad Street in Newark and all the way down to Ferry Street, 20 to 30,000 Italian people. And this meant that there was an emergency. Mm. It wasn't that easy to count people in those days, and it wasn't that easy for information to get around, but someone told him that there was a committee formed and they wanted to come and see him about starting a parish. Mm. And when the Presbyterians saw this wave of immigrants, they were alarmed and they put up a number of churches for sale. One of them being First Presbyterian Church on Edison Place in Ferry Street. He bought it through a third party, so they wouldn't know they were selling to him. And when the committee went to meet him, to speak to him, he said, "I'm way ahead of you. Here are the keys. Go down and get to work." And, wow. You know, he's German. He was the son of immigrants from Westphalia, Germany, and he had that rather no-nonsense way about him. He was not always liked by people, but he was a very good and honest and very, very good priest. The diocese grew tremendously under his tutelage. Then there's Monsignor D'Aquila. Ernesto D'Aquila came to America, like a lot of young priests in those days, to work with the immigrants and also maybe to be able to do something for their families. And Monsignor D'Aquila had a tremendous education. He was a musician and an organist. Hmm. He spoke French. He was a seminary professor. He also was an inventor. And when he came to America with a partner, he invented the gas line interrupter, which was installed in many, 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 many houses on gas appliances, and in those days, gas lights. If a gas light were to somehow go out during the night, you could be gassed to death. Because there was no way to stop the gas without turning the switch. In this case, though, he invented something that when the flame went out, boom, a valve closed and the gas stopped. A lot of that money he funneled into Mount Carmel Parish. A lot of that money he lent to different churches. And sometimes was never repaid. Hmm. He too had his ways. He could be ornery, but he was a kind and generous person, and he died too young. Hmm. And in the end, of course, people realized what they had lost. Hmm. Yes, he opened the school. He bought the old office building here on and refitted it into a school. He got Mother Cabrini to come and work here. The school was on Ferry Street. I'm sorry, I made a mistake there. The school was on Ferry Street, number 50 and 52, I believe. No longer extant. And there she taught the children of immigrants. The place was packed.
It was.
They had no heat in the winter, and nothing in the summer. They died in there in the heat.
It was two storefronts.
They just couldn't wait to go to school. It was a storefront, yeah. It was extremely hot.
And I think that mother, she wrote, she had 27 cents to get it all started. Anyway, I'm sorry, so you continue. Just wanted to give, you know, a little detail.
Those were the good old days. Those were the good old days. The Diocese of Newark was very, very fortunate in having bishops like Wigger. Wigger was succeeded by O'Connor, but was to be bishop 27 years. There's a celebrated silver jubilee as Bishop of Newark. O'Connor was an amazing person, very quiet, but he opened 85 schools.
Wow.
Was an amazing thing. And I don't remember how many parishes, but it was an astounding number of parishes. And he opened churches for Italians, Poles, Germans, Slovaks, you name it, and those parishes were opened. These were great men. They were great men. They were wonderful bishops. And of course, then came Archbishop Hughes, Archbishop Walsh, who everyone thought was a closet Italian because he was always seemed to be with us, usually partying and eating at parish events. And his sociability and his love for the immigrant people was brought out in the tremendous number of vocations and the amazing outpouring of affection and generosity on the part of the people of the Archdiocese of Newark. He was the first archbishop, and he brought a lot of joy. He brought a lot of honor and a lot of pride to the archdiocese. Hmm. We were supremely lucky. But then came the Depression, and it was something very, very difficult. Many parishes did not make it through the Depression. They just couldn't make it. So that's at least something. Mount Carmel, of course, lived through the Depression. Monsignor died in 1933. And in his will, he left the parish $10,000. That's $150,000 in today's money. You know, tide you over until good times come. So it is, it's a wonderful story when you think about it.
Oh, definitely.
And the generosity never ceased. It's just wonderful. So what can we say?
Now the first Italian parish though in New Jersey was Holy Rosary, correct?
Correct. Holy Rosary, Jersey.
No. Yes, Holy Rosary was the first, yes. I was thinking of Newark, and Newark would be St. Philip Neri, which is no longer in existence.
And that was
Holy Rosary is the oldest, 1885, it was the oldest.
And who founded that? It was founded by Italians from where?
Holy Rosary was the whole peninsula.
Really?
Oh, so it was whoever was living in that neighborhood, or even beyond.
Oh yeah, of course. In 1885, when it was built, people came down Route 7, the Belleville Turnpike, it was called those days, Washboard Avenue, because it was paved with planks, and horse and buggy to go to Mass.
Wow.
Holy Rosary. In those days, had 10,000 parishioners at least.
She was
in a wooden church, which was extended twice to bring it up to a maximum of 600 people.
Wow.
And it was the typical operation with the bullhorns over the doors, doors open, windows open, and the heat would kill you. And people would be standing outside, the whole thing. Until 1902, when the present church was built, but only three-quarters of the present church. The present church was extended in 1934 in the depths of the Depression under Monsignor de Persia, and it was extended, and the sanctuary and the altar that we see now were installed by him in 1934, the worst year of the Depression, and no one knows how they did it. It's beyond belief, but they did.
The Italians then, the St. Philip Neri was founded or was staffed by Palatines, correct? Monsignor?
I believe from its beginning. I believe from its very beginning it was, yeah.
And what part of Newark was that, St. Philip Neri?
Central Ward.
It is where the New Jersey Bell buildings are. And I'm not sure of the exact street, but okay. It's up past Broad Street, up there.
So closer to St. Lucie, I guess, than to Mount Carmel.
No. It would be closer to St. Lucie's, but not that close. It would be sort of north. I don't know if that's Central Ward. I'm not sure. I believe it might still be. I don't know. I'm not sure.
Do you know who were the Italians that settled in that neighborhood?
I think that too was a mixture, but there were people from Potenza there, I know. There were Neapolitans there. There were Sicilians there. That's for sure. Definitely were Sicilians there.
Monsignor, when you were in seminary, weren't you at Immaculate Conception that had Italians too in Newark?
Oh yes, Immaculate Conception on Woodlawn Avenue, off of in the height in the North Ward. Off of Bloomfield Avenue, I thought, well, Woodside Avenue. Right near, it's near the other church there. Trying to think now. Well, it's a church, and the population was almost exclusively from the province of Vicenza, which is in the Veneto. Three Venetian regions.
That church is no longer there. That church is gone.
There's a shrine. No, it's still there. Church of the Immaculate Conception.
But it's so that was founded as an Italian parish as well.
Yes.
Oh, okay. That I didn't know. Okay. I always take notes. I got to write that down. So Immaculate Conception.
Yeah, and they were from Veneto. They were from the North.
Immaculate Conception, definitely. St. Philip Neri, definitely. Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Our Lady of the Holy Rosary. And I'm trying to think if there's anything else.
If you count St. Anthony's in Belleville as Newark, Silver Lake section.
That was... straddled the line between Newark and Belleville. That straddled the line.
So obviously, Newark, one of the largest cities in New Jersey, of course, had a large Italian population. But there were many other pockets of there were many other Italian enclaves or other pockets of Italians throughout the was then the diocese of Newark, but even throughout the whole state of New Jersey. So I mean, I grew up in the town of Lodi. And we had St. Joseph's Church in Lodi. That was founded by Sicilian immigrants. my great-grandfather was one of them that founded the church. Up the hill in Garfield, you had Our Lady of Mount Virgin, which was founded originally by, I believe, Neapolitans, correct?
Mount Virgin? Yeah, originally, yes. That's why it has that name.
Because Our Lady of Sorrows, wasn't that more of the Sicilian church? That was down the other end of town?
Yeah, that was more of the Sicilians were there. And that was a mission of... that was a mission of I think it was a mission of Sacred Heart
Clifton?
In Clifton.
Huh.
In Clifton, because that was the Diocese of Newark was the whole state. Then it was the whole northern part of the state. So, probably a mission of...
Because Sacred Heart was also, that was founded by Northern Italians as well.
Sacred Heart was an Italian foundation, yes.
They were also from the Veneto, I believe.
They were from the Veneto, yeah.
Yes.
Monsignor, when you were first ordained, you spent the first 6 months at Mount Virgin and Garfield, right?
For 7 months, yeah. Mount Virgin and Garfield.
And what was that like?
I was there from May until December the 28th of 1974.
What was it like?
It was like being in Italy.
Yeah.
It was, I don't know. I think it's still very much the time, even now. There were so many... There were so many stores for Italian products. You didn't know where to go first.
Oh yeah.
So many cafes, like you wouldn't believe. You didn't know which one. You could have a different one every day of the week. That's where I learned to speak the dialect there. They really, really hung on to the Sicilian dialect. They're really. That was really something, you know?
Because later on, in more recent years since its founding, that has become a truly Sicilian parish. Of course, people from Maraneo, Bolognetta, what's the other one? Bagheria.
Alessandria della Rocca. That was another big group.
And it was even, I believe, also, because I recently was in the area and I was talking to an older, well, not before the pandemic, obviously, I was talking to an older woman and she was from Motta da Fermo, which I think is the Provincia di Messina, but it's close to the water. And some of them are even from Santo Stefano di Camastra, where my family's from. So, yeah, so really it's evolved a lot over the years. But it seems like that's what happens to a lot of these Italian parishes, whether they're a different... Whether they're from different places in Italy, or obviously then if the whole neighborhood changes, and you know, then you said now you have the Haitians and the Peruvians at Mount Carmel, so things definitely have a very cyclical way of going around. But also the other areas that have a lot of Italians, a place I can think of, Hoboken, New Jersey, a large Italian population. You had the San Giacomese from Monte San Giacomo, who pretty much founded St. Anne's Church. And you also had the Molfettese from the Provincia di Bari, but also there was a large group of Genovese that originally came to Hoboken, and actually Frank Sinatra's mother was one of them.
St. Francis in Hoboken was the Genovese church, and St. Anne was more Salernitana.
Yes, and there was there is still a chapel for the Sicilians, Santa Febronia.
It's still there,
but I don't know if that's, I don't think they have mass or anything. It's more of just like a private.
They do have mass every once in a while. They do. They have a complete church and everything. It's beautiful. It's a beautiful little chapel.
Then, as you go up the hill from Hoboken, you go into Weehawken and Union City, and those areas also have a lot of Italians. So, Monsignor, weren't you also at St. Anthony's Church?
St. Anthony's on 8th and Central Avenue. Now, St. Anthony was Lombard and Piemontese, a little bit Tuscan, but it had, you know, little groups of others too there. St. Anthony's was originally a ministry of the Passionists. They took care of the Italian people of Union City, and they started St. Anthony's Church for the Italian people.
Hmm.
And that too, St. Anthony's Church had a very interesting connection to the Salesian order through its pastor, who was the nephew or grandnephew of the second successor of Don Bosco, the superior of the Salesian order, Blessed Philip Rinaldi. And Monsignor Rinaldi and three of his brothers were ordained priests, all Salesians. Monsignor left the Salesians for whatever reason, and then he entered the archdiocese. And two sisters were Salesian nuns. And St. Anthony was an interesting place. The church was beautiful. It was, you know, a little bit roughed up by the times, but it's a beautiful church. It was built in 1950, I believe.
Oh, so it's a newer church?
The war. Yes. The old church was a wooden church. It was very nice in looking inside, but outside it really, really, you could see that it had seen better days.
Mm.
And it was also one of those churches where there's no room on either side. It was right near the monastery and packed into a block filled with buildings. So Monsignor Rinaldi built St. Anthony's, and Monsignor Rinaldi was an Italian immigrant, of course, and his family, some of them came to America. He had a brother who was pastor in the church, Corpus Christi, in Portchester, New York.
Oh, yes, church
was
yes.
Famous for the Holy Shroud of Turin that was the copy that was kept there. And Monsignor Rinaldi left the Salesians, and within 30 days, he went from being pastor of St. Anthony's in Elizabeth, another huge Italian community, and within a month, he was pastor of St. Anthony's in Union City. He was also in the Army. He was a chaplain in the United States Army, and after the war, he was asked by Pope Pius to come and see him. It was summoned to the Holy Father. So the Holy Father said to him, "I don't want you to go home." He said, "I want you to stay here. I'm going to make you an archbishop, and I'm going to put you in the diplomatic corps because of your experiences." Because after his tour of duty, he spent a year in Italy directing relief efforts. So then he begged the Pope not to force him to stay. He said, "Because I promised the people of Union City a new church, and I have to keep my promise."
Wow.
Pius XII, well, instead of being upset, was didn't know what to do for him. So he said, "I make you a Monsignor now in front of me." And he ordered a huge collection of relics to be made for him. All the apostles, all the founders of religious orders, all the favorite saints of the Italian people, everything you could think of. And then he said to him, "Go see the king, because he too has something for you." Sure did. A lot of knighthoods. It was
really
decorated so many times. Oh yeah, but by the time he went home, See, all during the war, and then during his year where he directing his relief, whenever he had a chance, he went to Pietrasanta and picked out the marble, the altars. The church was to be one of the most. It was the largest church, the Italians. It was the largest Italian church until until the Holy Family of Notley was built, which is a little bigger. St. Anthony's is an immense, it's an immense church. It's sat, 1,000 people at least.
Wow.
A big church. And very spacious, yeah.
But also in Union City, wasn't there, there's also St. Rocco, correct?
St. Rocco's, yeah.
And that's more of a southern Italian parish?
I don't know much about St. Rocco's. It's a very beautiful church.
And also there was Our Lady of Libera? Libera was also
Our Lady of Libera is West New York. That's West New York. Okay. Our Lady of Libera was a lot of people from Campobasso there, but they were not the whole church, but there were enough of them that they named it after a devotion in Campobasso.
But you see, so I mean, but then also then you go north from there and you go into Fairview, and Fairview had actually the church is called Our Lady of Grace, but it was founded as Madonna delle Grazie.
Yes, that's the legal name still.
And that's run and has been run by the Palatines as well.
Yeah, it still is. Yeah.
Father Peter, I believe, is the pastor there.
Well, the Palatines ran. The church in the city too. They ran the we just talked about it.
St. Rocco.
Yeah, St. Rocco's.
Oh
in
wow,
Union
that
city.
I didn't know. Okay.
So interesting. And An then amazing you... story. Someone should write it.
About what? About that church?
Well, there's Italian churches in New York. You know, there were many.
Yes.
There were 30 at least 30.
The other interesting thing is, so obviously then you go into these little hamlets in northern New Jersey, northern Bergen County, so such as like I think it's Northvale, which at one time had a very large Italian population, and I believe the church there is also St. Anthony, correct?
Correct.
Yeah. Wasn't there the story that the pastor had like sheep or something living in the rectory or chickens or something?
Sheep? I don't remember anything like that. I'm going to look it up.
I thought there was something like
history of the church in New Jersey. So might say something in here. I don't know.
Because I guess a lot of Italians that were farmers, because that area of Bergen County was more of a rural farming area, so I guess a lot of them settled in that area as well.
Speaking of rural farming areas in Bergen County, Monsignor was telling me about a church in Munaki that is no longer existent, of St. Anthony's. Monsignor, what about that one? What was the story with that?
It closed during the Depression, I believe, in 1934.
People
had nothing.
Did they have an actual church?
Yeah. What's even more amazing is there was a church in York. As you're going up, because it's a one-way street. I'm trying to think now, but it parallels Ferry Street.
Raymond Boulevard.
Now, normally you would think the right side of Raymond Boulevard is all industrial, mm-hmm. warehouses, but it wasn't. It still has people living there. Still, it's considered St. Aloysius Parish now. But in those days, it had the Church of St. Mary Magdalene. It had a church, a rectory, a school, and a convent.
Wow.
and it's all been turned into warehouses at this point. One man told me, he said he's sure that his factory was a church at one time because the door is shaped like a church door. So wow. It closed also in the Depression.
It really is amazing, though.
At our height, we had under Bishop O'Connell, we had 285 parishes. Wow. By the time of the Depression, a lot of those little wooden churches and these tiny little things, a lot of them went out. And it couldn't pay even the light bill.
In Newark's heyday, we had 38 churches, Catholic churches.
Wow.
And now I believe it's down to about 26.
I remember Boland refusing to close anything, but then when priests were being mugged during the riots, he ordered St. Philip Neri closed. He ordered St. George Slovak closed. St. Anne's in Jersey City closed. Someone had to say something because before there was a murder.
Tell the story Tell the story about Monsignor Cardalicchio in Jersey City. Wasn't he at an Italian parish? At Our Lady of Sorrow.
Our Lady of Sorrow.
What was his story?
Monsignor Cardalicchio was an unusual person. He was a monk at the Abbey of Monte Vergine in Italy. He was deposited there at the age of 9. Listen to this. Then his parents decided to go to America and took the whole family with them. They left him there. He was in his 30s and ordained a priest and was a monk since 9 years old. Come on. Archbishop Boland shows up. His sister, whom he didn't know, asked that he be invited to work in the Archdiocese of Newark. And he agreed to come. It was all moved by mutual agreement. And he went to Garfield, to Our Lady of Sorrows. Then at a certain point, he was, as he put it, he was promoted to Jersey City. And Jersey City, he had to follow. He had some big shoes to fill because Monsignor Ernesto Monteleone was the previous pastor, and he built everything you could find there, school, rectory, convent, everything you could think of. And then came, through the disturbances during the riots, and it was very difficult. He did one thing, though. He kept the school open, no matter what. How? I don't know. It was an amazing person. He knew where every penny went. Made every penny work. And it was an amazing thing. Now, you would think someone who was not too used to leaving the house, he hardly ever went anywhere. His car was 20 years old. He never went anywhere. And celebrated his golden jubilee, a lot of us went. He's a good guy, A lot of us went. And when we went into church, a lot of grateful people were in that church. A lot of neighborhood people were in that church. Every different color and every shade was in that church. For a man who never set foot. Why? Because he took care of them. That school stayed open, whether you paid, you didn't pay. It was a beautiful thing to see. It was a beautiful thing to see packed. And when we have people that, I guess he provided what they needed at the time. he needed a safe place for the kids to go to school, and he did it. But they all had their faults, but their virtues outweighed their faults. It's we are too quick to condemn because we see an idiosyncrasy or we see somebody's a little bit goofy or whatever. That's only on the surface. So yeah, he was a character. Fine. Maybe God wanted you to have that little humor. And you got to see what the people did when the chips were down and when people were suffering, what they did. And that what they did was stick them, in many cases, stick their hand in their pocket and make it happen. So these were people that some of them I was lucky enough to know. And a lot of them had family members that worked for little or nothing. And people used to would criticize, but don't criticize. That was a ministry for a lot of these people. What can you do?
He retired from Our Lady of Sorrows. He retired from there, or he passed away there?
Not really. He was there for a long. He was there way after retirement.
Oh. So he went from Our Lady of Sorrows in Garfield to Our Lady of Sorrows in Jersey City.
In Jersey City, yeah, it's interesting. Some people stay with the title, you know. They're always under the patronage of the Blessed Virgin.
Yes.
Or Saint Anthony, or you know, it is. It is amazing when you think about it.
Oh, definitely. The other area of the diocese or the archdiocese that has or had a lot of Italians was also Scotch Plains, right? You had I can't think of the name of the church now.
Bartholomew,
yeah. And they're from
Montazzoli and the Abruzzi. Montazzoli Abruzzo, yeah.
And that's their patron saint, Saint Bartholomew? No, actually, I lied. St. Nicola di Bari is their patron.
Yeah, St. Nicola is the patron saint. There in the that's not an Italian parish, though. That's a territorial parish. It was not established specifically for Italians, but there are a lot of them there.
Oh. Is Our Lady of Mount Carmel in Montclair, is that considered an Italian parish? A national parish?
Yes.
It was, yeah.
Oh, they could take that distinction away from them?
It's now merged with the other parish, with the Immaculate Conception.
Immaculate Conception, yeah, because it's Saint Teresa Calcutta is the name of the newly formed parish. But right. But there was a lot of Sicilians as well settled in that parish, as well as people from Aquilonia and Lacedonia, right? That's the was it Provincia di Avellino?
Yep. Correct.
Yeah, that's right. There
was a famous priest, that Monsignor, I don't know, did you ever meet him, Annunziato Crescenti, that you always talk about?
Well, Crescenti was American born.
He ministered.
He sounds like he was from Italy, but he was American born.
He was a longtime pastor there in Montclair.
Montclair, yeah. And he died, he was on an outing with his sister and they were on the train coming into the station in Montclair, and the train jumped the tracks. And I'm not even sure if it capsized. Jeez. Jumped the tracks, and he got off and went to sit on a park bench. And then he got the thought, let me go see if my sister's all right. She was fine. He sat down and died.
Oh.
I don't know if it's if that's exact or whatever, but it's the story that was told me many times. I guess it was a shock, or maybe he had heart trouble. He didn't know it. God knows what happened to him. But that's interesting.
Because that they when my great grandparent my great grandfather came from Sicily. he originally settled in Montclair. There was a large – he was from Capizzi, but there was a large Cheromese population there. And one of my great uncles, he designed
the – Cerami, yes. That's Cerami. The St. Sebastian.
Yep. And he, my great uncle designed – there's a like a an archway around the saint with the lights in it. And actually it says donated or made by my great uncle Antonino Scilia. It says it they were all blacksmiths. The whole family was blacksmiths. Well, my Scilia side of the family is blacksmiths until the 1700s. That was the whole line.
That's amazing.
So I just recently found out about that because a friend of mine, I don't know if you know Ennio Monjoy and Dan Arminio. They're from that.
I've probably seen them a million times, but the names do ring bells.
Yeah, they were looking when they were setting up the statue for his feast day mass, which was back in January, and they saw my name, they saw the last name Scilia. So they said, "Oh, so I had to go for that. I had to attend the mass there, and it was beautiful to be able to make that connection to my ancestry."
Right.
But Eric, your family is from a town in Calabria called Spillinga.
Spillinga. Yeah.
And when they came over, they settled in that area around Mount Carmel, correct?
Around Mount Carmel.
In Newark.
Correct. I mean, there were other Italians in Newark that were not from Spillinga. I mean, the Buccino, San Gregorio Magno, Nocera Superiore, a lot from the Salerno region, Romagnolo al Monte. Then later on, you had a lot from Molise. You had a few people from Rocco Mandolfi, a few people from Castel Petroso. But the Spillingas were kind of last on the scene in terms of, you know, Italians in Newark. I mean, the first few started coming in the 1920s, but they came by and large in the 50s and 60s.
So they were part of that second wave of immigration that came after the war.
Correct. The newer one, yeah.
So, Monsignor, were there a lot of people from your town in Italy that settled in Jersey City?
There were more in Jersey City than there were in Italy.
Really?
There were more in Canada than there were in Italy.
So they went to Montreal and they went to Jersey City. Those were like the two main
places. They went to Montreal. They went to Jersey City. They went to Vancouver, British Columbia. They went to... My people started coming in the 1880s. Mm-hmm. They were all over the place. My family came 1887 and, of course, had to make 3 trips back because there was no work, and no work meant you start. There was no assistance either, so you went back. You always saved enough money for the ticket back. So there were 7 returns. No one was brought here to America, now, especially children, because of the way children were treated in the schools, really, really bad. No one in my family wanted to come, so only the men came. The men came in 1887 for the first time. By 1903, they were citizens, American citizens, but it was still hard to convince the women to come. So the women and children stayed in Italy. And that's back and forth until 1887 to 1930 was the last year, back and forth.
What did they do when they came here? What was their what kind of business did they do?
My people, they worked on the railroads.
Okay.
They were always on the railroad. Later on, they became electricians, but still, they all worked on the railroad. They were signal, they were power rail. But it was always the same story. They were always on the railroad.
So that's kind of what brought them here was the building of the railroads.
Well, I guess you could say that, but the railroads, it was more the expansion in the city. In New York City, in the subways.
Oh, okay.
Because my family, they worked on what became the MTA. It wasn't the MTA then. And then they worked on the what became the PATH trains, which in those days was the Hudson and Manhattan Railroad. that was that became Pass when, you know, when railroad was became bankrupt, then they formed the Port Authority, and the Port Authority took over, and then things changed, and the it was an interesting.
And what province is that? Is that in Molise?
What?
But that your family's from? What the town? What province?
It's province of Campobasso.
Campobasso, okay. Because what? There's only two
There was originally only one. Molise was always. It was always one. Making it two was some politician's idea of causing trouble. And all it did was it forced people to go to two places to get, because it is the smallest population, I think. It's not 400,000 people, the whole, wow. The whole Molise. Wow. Of course, to say all those cities I mentioned, we also have in Argentina, huge community. In Venezuela, we have too. We have in Australia too. We have everywhere. Belgium, Germany, England.
So they
farmers had to get a job, so they left and they went.
Because prior to the 19, when did Abruzzi split to Molise and Abruzzo?
I believe it was 1966.
Oh, so it was that late?
Yeah, it was that late because under the Kingdom of the Two Sicilies, we were a separate county, which of course was ruled by a duke dash count. And he or she ran the show. And when the Kingdom of Italy was declared, we were stuck with Abruzzi. I don't believe there was any agreement to that. I think they just did it. And that remained for all those years. And then finally, it's what happens when you are small and they put you with something much larger than you. You end up being eaten.
Yes.
So it was an interesting. That was an interesting problem. It was a long running problem.
Yes.
It wasn't solved until the 1966, but then it was almost too late because so many of our people were gone.
Because
the few that remain are wealthy, you see, because they have, they don't have like these 10-acre farms like they had before. They had hundreds of acres.
Yeah.
Yeah, and they have big businesses. And they make money. That's the way it was when my father was born in 1913, our bias was 4,000 people. It is now 512 people, I think.
Holy cow.
I can't even trust that. I wouldn't know if that is even accurate anymore.
I have friends that are originally from Campobasso, but because their family came so early, they consider themselves Abruzzese. Not so they call themselves Abruzzese, yeah, even though technically
that's because they don't know.
Yeah.
They're not
Abruzzese anymore. Yeah, they were from Molisan.
What happens all the time with those type of arrangements, they don't work.
Yeah.
And then after a while, there's trouble.
Before we conclude this evening, we have to talk a little bit about food. So, Eric always tells me, Monsignor, that you make the best pastiera.
Well, I can tell you what I make. There's no precise recipe.
Uh-huh.
But I will tell you what it is. It's 1 3-pound can of ricotta. It's 1 dozen large eggs. 1 dozen. It's a cup and a half to 2 cups of sugar.
I'm writing this down.
A cup and a half to 2 cups.
It's a cup and a half to 2 cups of boiled rice. It is orange peel, lemon peel, you know, the cedro.
Yep.
Lemon extract. I don't put cinnamon and stuff like that in it. I don't like it. All of this is to taste.
Mm-hmm.
Who likes a lot? Who doesn't? I put orange flower water in there. I don't put orange extract. Excuse me. I put orange flower water in there, which you get in the Italian stores. And I do use a shell. You can use the shells, the pie shells that you buy.
Mm-hmm.
Except that you use you have to use a pan. And I use a regular cake pan, but it's the extra large size. This is I would say it's a foot across.
Oh wow!
Big pan.
Yeah.
Or you can make two smaller ones with that.
Mm-hmm.
That's how I make it, and it's I don't remember having a recipe ever.
How long do you cook it for? How long do you cook it for?
It cooks at 350 degrees for about an hour, but you have to watch because every stove is different.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It has to be solid, mm-hmm. but not dried out.
Anthony, Monsignor's being a little bashful. Not only is this pastiera delicious, but a lot of the cooking, how I cook today, I learned from him by watching him and asking him constantly. Brussels sprouts that he makes, to die for. Bolognese sauce that he makes, to die for. Pasta and tuna fish, to die for. All of his own recipes. And he will tell you that back in 2005, he was made a Monsignor by Archbishop Myers because he liked his pork roast. That's true.
That's a joke.
I know it's a joke.
I started that joke because I don't know. People are funny. I started that joke.
Monsignor's an excellent cook. And if you've ever had, you know,
my father and my mother were both good cooks. Not fancy cooks. They never made, you know, they never attempted to make restaurant food. They made paisan food. My father tended, however, not to like our paisan food. I shouldn't even say that on a public medium of any kind, but he did not. We tend to cook plain. And also, we tend to cook, like, spaghetti sauce is cooked, for a while, and then that's it. We don't cook it until the spoon stands up. We don't put, like, 7 pounds of meat in it. That's all Neapolitan. It's all from a city where, you know, the good life is appreciated. It is, but my father had an expression when somebody said, you don't like the food you grew up with? He said, if I want water, I know where the sink is.
Oh, boy.
Meaning that it was thin and rather tasteless.
Yeah.
So we only saw Bison things like once in a blue moon, like Easter, Christmas, stuff like that. They would make, mostly it was the cookies and things, but my buyers was good with that. They were very good cookie makers, especially filled cookies, filled with cherry, Morena, filled with chocolate and chestnut, filled with those kind of things. They were very good at making.
What are they called? What were they called in your town? Those types of cookies.
Well, they're biscotti.
Biscotti.
In the dialect, they're biscotti ringed.
So filled.
In Italian, I guess would be biscotti farcite. They're filled cookies.
Mm-hmm.
They're like empanadas, but they have inside chocolate and a chickpea paste or chestnut paste with honey, with walnuts, and then you fill like a ravioli.
Hmm.
You fry them, and you put some powdered sugar on them. They were delicious.
Oh, so these are fried. These are fried cookies.
They're fried, yeah.
Oh, so they're not baked.
Yeah, there's baked cookies too. There's that almond biscotti. There's nuts. There's there are all kinds of cookies. But as a matter of fact, the custom when there was a wedding, your invitation wasn't mailed to you because you're in the little village. They would get these white bags, fill them with cookies, put the invitation on top, and put it on your doorknob.
Huh.
So that the wedding begins with the morning when you go out to see what's outside, and you see the bag, you bring it in, and you enjoy your, with that morning's coffee, you enjoy your wedding cookies.
Wow. I remember you were telling us a story about there was a woman that she made she was famous for making these wedding cookies in your town.
Yeah, she was the priest's sister.
Hmm.
And she was good at thousands. She had four of those big freezer lockers. She had the stand up ones. And it was she had quite a system too. They're enterprising.
Yeah.
Yeah, in the old days, the priest's sister wasn't supposed to work. She wasn't supposed to leave the house unaccompanied. She wasn't at all. And she was supposed to wait on the priest hand and foot and all. And so she, that became her job.
Wow.
She did very well with it, by the way. She did very well with it, but she passed away.
Hmm. Tomorrow is the Feast of San Giorgio, correct?
Yes.
Tomorrow is San Giorgio, the patron of the Constantinian Order. Patron of England, patron of a lot of countries.
And he's also he's also the patron of a little town called, or it's a part of Ragusa called Ragusa Ibla. They have a I think Modica too does a big thing for San Giorgio. But unfortunately
Monica de Chiesa Madre is St. George.
Yeah, I know, but unfortunately this year a lot of these festivals and festivities are being either canceled or postponed because of the pandemic. So that's an unfortunate thing. But San Giorgio is a strong, he's also strong also in the Orthodox religion or the Orthodox Christianity as well.
Yeah. Yeah. Dragon Slayer.
Venerated also in Piana degli Albanesi and in Lungro too.
Oh, really?
Italo Albanese hold them in very high regard as well.
Huh. Monsignor, before we conclude this evening, can you give us your priestly blessing?
Yes. Benedicat vos omnipotens Deus Pater et Filius et Spiritus Sancti. Discendat super vos et convos maniat semper. Amen.
Amen. Well, Monsignor Eric, I want to thank you guys very much for coming on the show tonight. I appreciate your time, and I can't wait to be able to see you in person to be able to continue our conversation more. Hopefully, it'll be sooner rather than later.
Anthony, I'm hoping. I was telling Monsignor before. I'm hoping for a round two of Istria Club.
Oh yeah, we didn't even touch on that. That was an amazing. Yeah. That was an amazing afternoon.
Round two. What do you think, Monsignor?
That was nice. This time, I have to see if that guy is there in the kitchen.
Yeah. And actually, they're having. I mean, again, I think a lot of these things are getting canceled. But there's a Trentino Club in Ridgewood, Queens. And their food is more Germanic in taste, and they do these different dinners once a month, but unfortunately they've been pushing it off because of this pandemic. So that might be something to.
We'll go there too. Don't worry. I'm sure.
Well, Eric and Monsignor, I want to thank you so much for taking time out to come on At the Table with Tony. You guys are the best. Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you, Tony.
So I am Anthony Sciglia, better known as Tony Mangia. We'll see you next time. Ciao for now.
At the Table with Tony would like to thank its sponsors. Rocco Muriale, Rob Quick, Joseph Cirillo, Raymond Guarini, Tom Gilmore, Oli G, Peter Ziza, Brian McGuire, Peter Ferreira, Rich Ottenstrauer, Anna Mavrianos, Antonio Pepinella, Anthony Ferraro, Sandra and Bob LaMotta, Mike Guerro, the Italian Enclaves Historical Society,